This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 27th of April, 2012. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 27th of April 2012, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Claire Caffreen.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Ellen Gray.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now let's have a quick look at what's on. Well, the Theatre Royal in Winchester is doing HMS Pinafore from Tuesday to Saturday, May the 1st to the 5th. That's on at 7:30pm and 2:30pm. That's the Saturday one. It's being done by the Winchester Operatic Society. If you're interested, please contact the box office on 01962 840 440. Now, at the Mayflower in Southampton, there is Oliver, Tuesday the May the 1st to Saturday May the 26th. That's Tuesday to Saturday at 7:30pm, Thursday and Saturday matinees 2pm, and on Sunday it's 3pm, and on Wednesday May the 23rd it's 2pm. It's got Brian Connolly in it as Fagin. And the box office number is 02380711811. That's 02380711811. And now, on Tuesday, May the 1st at lunchtime, there's a concert at Winchester Cathedral, and that's from 1pm to 2pm. And that's the Peter Simmons College Specialist... The Peter Simmons College Specialist Music Students. And it's free, but there is a retiring collection. And another notice to finish. It's a reminder of our annual general meeting, and that's the Winchester Talking Newspaper annual general meeting. This is the 22nd annual general meeting of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper Association, and it will be held on Wednesday the 9th of May at 2pm at Littleton Village Millennium Hall. That's Wednesday the 9th of May at 2pm at Littleton Village Millennium Hall. And we're delighted to welcome as our guest speaker, Tom McInnulty. And he's the Group Support and Develop Manager in the South of the Macular Disease Society. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 27th of March at 5:46am and begins at 8:22pm. And on Wednesday the 2nd of May, it ends at 5:37am and begins at 8:30pm. If you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement memory stick. Please remember the card inside, to put this card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. Now, the front page headlines this week are 90% of parents get first choice school places, 5-year equal pay claims settled, and Bishop's message of faith. So, may we have the story behind the first front page headline, Claire?
90% of parents get first choice school places. 1 in 10 in Hampshire missed out on their first choice primary school amid a growing shortage of reception places. Winchester City has among the biggest squeeze on places in the county, with 17% of the families allocated second or third choice schools. St Bede's C of E, St Peter's Catholic and St Faith's C of E were massively oversubscribed. Pressure on places is due to rising birth rates, house building and younger families moving into the area. combined with fewer parents opting for private education in the economic downturn. The County Council is creating an extra 74 reception class places with temporary classrooms this September in some Winchester schools to cope with demand. Primaries earmarked for expansion are Western, St Peter's Catholic, Winnall, Hairstock and All Saints. However, some still have a shortage of places. St Bede received 92 first-choice applications for 60 places, leaving 32 families disappointed, including 16 who live in the catchment area. County Council is building new permanent classrooms, but the published admission number has remained at 60. The school opened its gates to 90 reception class pupils in 2011, but county officials said this was a one-off bulge year. St Peter's Catholic and Oliver's Battery expanded from a 45 pupil reception intake to 60, but received 84 first choice applications, meaning 24 families failed to get in. Meanwhile, 15 parents who put St Faith as their first choice school, 20 places, missed out. At Western, the local authority plans to concrete over a part of a school playing field to make way for a double temporary classroom, which has caused concerns at the school gate. Parents are worried the school is already cramped and there are no plans to enlarge the hall, staff room or IT suite. But it means the school can offer places to an extra 30 pupils, expanding to a three-form entry primary. As a result, all 77 parents who put it as their first choice school were offered places this September, unlike last year when youngsters living in catchment were rejected. Hampshire is to get an extra $9.7 million from the government to create more school places in areas facing the biggest shortages, including Winchester, Hedge End and Fareham. Council also plans to use its capital budget and contributions from housing developers to fund school building projects. The local authority is currently consulting the public about a radical plan to turn the Westgate School into a school for children aged 4 to 16, with a new two-form entry primary on the site of Rotherley Boarding House. The first reception intake could start in 2014. An alternative proposal being considered is longer-term expansion of some schools to create an extra 85 reception places for the foreseeable future. County officials estimate building a new primary would cost $10 million and continued expansion of primaries $11 million. This year, 89.9% of parents in Hampshire, excluding Portsmouth and Southampton, got into their first preference school, similar to last year, despite an increase in demand for places. Across the county, this would mean 2,000 families, 10%, were rejected by their first choice primary school.
And can we have the second front page headline, please, Noel?
Yes, five-year equal pay claims settled. Council chiefs have reached a secret deal with unions over equal pay claims, which could cost taxpayers tens of millions of pounds. It means a five-year wrangle, which has left Hampshire County Council with a hefty legal bill, is finally over. The settlement with Unison and GMB follows about 900 equal pay claims from current and former employees. The mostly female cooks, cleaners and carers were paid less than male colleagues for doing work of equal value. The council has refused to reveal the size of the taxpayer-funded compensation bill or legal costs, and the unions have also declined to comment. Instead, they released a joint statement saying Unison and GMB have reached agreement with Hampshire County Council to resolve and bring to an end the equal pay litigation which began in 2007. For reasons of confidentiality, no further comments can be made. Unite has not yet reached a deal with the council, but is expected to do so within the next few weeks. It is understood letters have been sent to staff making individual offers of compensation instead of a blanket agreement with unions. Staff who take the money have been asked to sign confidentiality agreements and withdraw their equal pay claims at Southampton Employment Appeals Tribunal. 5 years ago, unions said, home carers could be in line for £30,000 each as part of a mass litigation for equal pay, but it is understood payouts have been significantly lower under the compromise agreement, although still large sums for individual staff. One council employee, who asked not to be named, said the biggest cheque she had heard of was £7,000. The compensation claims were lodged after councils were forced to have new pay structures to close the gender pay gap under a government deal struck in 1997. Historically, mostly female cooks, cleaners and carers were paid less than mainly male bin men, groundsmen, warehouse keepers and drivers. In 2007, the county council reviewed some 1,700 posts and introduced a new pay structure. Staff whose wage was below the new level for their post could claim a government-set maximum of 6 years' back pay as compensation. Council bosses set aside a £17 million reserve in the 2007 budget to meet the one-off costs from possible claims, which they increased to £65 million by 2011. Last year, Tory council leader Ken Thornburgh warned taxpayers could end up footing a £90 million bill for equal pay claims.
And can we have the third and final front page headline, please, Ellen?
Bishop's message of faith. And there's a photograph of a smiling and very relaxed bishop in exquisite robes. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, leaving St. Lawrence's Church on his way to being enthroned as the 97th Bishop of Winchester. The 54-year-old was welcomed by church and civic leaders from across the diocese last Saturday. In his opening sermon, he said, "I would like the diocese to plan for growth and for more people to come into faith."
Now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, Westminster Diary, historical items, first person and chronicle comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Balfour Barrow, Ursula Balfour Barrow, peacefully at home. Belt, Marion Florence Belt, aged 87. Hillary, Janet Lillian Mary Hillary of Kingsworthy, peacefully at Winchester Hospital, aged 75. Parry, Sarah Parry, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice after a long illness. Prideaux, Lottie Prideaux, suddenly aged 89. Salmon, Conrad Salmon, peacefully at home, aged 91. Hobbs, Charles George Charlie Hobbs, peacefully. Macklin, Barry Arthur Macklin, peacefully at the Royal Bournemouth Hospital, aged 86. Ogus, Sadie Ogus, peacefully aged 94. Smith, Shirley Smith, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 74. And now it's Christian comment, read by Claire.
Canon Rowley Ream writes about undertaking a sacred task. If there is one thing that unites most modern citizens, it is this: the belief that those who claim to be serving us are actually only serving themselves. The language of service is, in our cynical mind's eye, just a convenient cloak for self-seeking. Surely the excesses of investigative journalism could only have been sanctioned in a culture in which everyone assumed that the truth was necessarily hidden under a veneer of rhetoric about the public good. Ironically, we realise now, newspapers themselves are not beyond suspicion either. What, though, would be the signs of someone actually trying to serve, of someone trying to buck the human tendency to use powers to feather our own nest? Perhaps swearing solemn declarations in public might count for something. Last Saturday, Bishop Timothy Dakin was enthroned in Winchester Cathedral. Enthroned is a great word for the installation of a bishop in his teaching seat, or cathedra, and the occasion was certainly marked by much pomp and ceremony. However, early on in the service, Bishop Tim laid his hands on a volume of our ancient Winchester Bible and declared that he would be a true and faithful pastor and a true father in God to the clergy and people of this diocese. Later on, the bishop asked the congregation to pray that he would know God's grace in the task which lay before him and do it all in God's strength. At the end, when the great west doors of the church were opened, the bishop gave his final blessing to the city and diocese, on all who live and pray here, and on all who work and worship here. I have no doubt whatsoever that if the good bishop had been strapped to a lie detector as he was making the declarations and blessing the city, the plain truth of his intention would have been proved scientifically. Here was someone truly prepared to serve and make sacrifices for others. Of course, Bishop Tim may be deflected from his professed path from time to time, as we all are. Leaders need to be forgiven with the rest of us. But those who gather to share his enthronement, and a host of others outside, reserve the right to be inspired by his leadership and to follow his example of sacrificial service. We reserve the right to believe that the prayers of the church and the support of many well-wishers in and around the city can help him to undertake the sacred task to which he has been called as 97th Bishop of Winchester. Canon Rowley Ream.
Now we have got 11 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, for Tenants Reed Council... Excuse me, for Tenants Reed Council scapegoat, says Roger Grucock. Sir, surprise, surprise, it's the Winnall Flats tenants' fault, referring to a letter in the Chronicle April the 19th. They dry their clothes indoors. They have too much furniture. They never open their windows. Well, my family uses our property in a similarly irresponsible way, but we are lucky enough to live in a house of standard construction and never suffer damp. I suggest Winchester City Council's housing officers are being disingenuous blaming the tenants. They know the flats are unfit for people to live in, but until the City Council builds new houses on politically sensitive greenfield sites, they have nowhere else to offer. The Council must decide what is more important. Is it people's amenity or is it people's health? In the meantime, it could refrain from scapegoating its tenants. Roger Grucock, Ashdown Close, Chandler's Ford.
Travellers have to live somewhere, write Leslie Roberts and Clarissa Palmer. Sir, we were disappointed to learn that the travellers at Mitchell Dever Station are to be moved on. They have lived in the area for many years, and as far as we are aware, there has been no significant increase in noise or antisocial behaviour since their arrival. We believe that crime statistics remain unusually low in the area. Indeed, whenever the opportunity arose, the travellers contributed to village life. When they moved to the area, they tidied the site and planted flowers. They ran a small business making wooden toys and garden furniture, which they sold to locals at very reasonable prices. They made outdoor children's toys and furniture for the Spread Eagle pub garden. Travellers have to live somewhere. Where will they go? Will the children have to move schools, and what effect will this have on them? What sad times we live in. We don't seem able to allow for alternative lifestyles, unless they mirror our own culture. A worry is that every time a travelling group gets moved on, they potentially feel increasingly alienated from society, and the problem escalates. So rather than solving issues, it just moves it to another area, and the sad cycle begins again. Leslie Roberts and Clarissa Palmer, Andover Road, Mitchell Dever Station.
Gone missing, writes Richard Sacree. Sir, a much-loved postbox that has resided on the concrete lamppost opposite Grovelands Road seems to have got lost in the street lighting upgrade without any notice. Still expecting it may reappear if one of our councillors takes up the mantle before the local elections in May. We miss you, little red box. You have provided an excellent service to the residents. Much missed in Teg Down. Richard Sacree, Teg Down Meads, Winchester.
And Peter O'Shaughnessy offers some free advice for the supermarket giants. Sir, sales for Sainsbury's and Tesco are slackening. No wonder. Here are some thoughts and tips if they want to pick things up. Why must one order online? If you find it all too complex, why not make a phone call and give the order to an operator? No, the system won't allow that. The operator will refer you to a colleague who will explain the procedural niceties, but as likely as not will be as bemused as you are and refer you to another colleague. After this has gone on for half an hour, you get giddy and jump off the roundabout. Best to visit the store and place the order on the spot. Surely nothing could be simpler. Ha! Not so. This god, the system, has ruled that the old-fashioned custom of person-to-person over-the-counter sales is taboo. But wait, Sainsbury's can grant a concession. Provided the cost of your order is many times multiplied the amount you would be able to order online, they'll oblige. Sainsbury's and Tesco might ask their accountants to calculate how much these chain calls have cost them in terms of wages paid to their employees. Solutions? Change the system. Instead of a recorded voice insisting you press one of various options, which, unless your timing is precise, will take you back to the beginning, employ a dozen telephonists. They would answer you person to person and be happy to take your order. To the credit of both stores, most of the operators I have spoken with have been unfailingly courteous.
Parochial outlook misplaced in city, writes Jeff Ward. Sir, I was disappointed, but not surprised, to read the article in the Chronicle of April the 19th. The residents of Oliver's Battery Road North are once again exhibiting the usual parochial outlook that they have demonstrated in the past. The phasing of the lights is, I agree, sometimes inconvenient. But it does not merely inconvenience a few hundred people who live in a small cul-de-sac, but many more people who live in Stanmore, Killam Lane and elsewhere. As an aside, it is my understanding that when the construction of Badger Farm Road split Oliver's Battery Road in two, it was to take account of the residents' wishes that Oliver's Battery Road North was made a cul-de-sac. Otherwise, there would be another exit from the road. The removal of the cycle refuge, which is used by cyclists, would only allow for one more car in the queue. Not a great difference, and I fail to see why traffic from the school run should be any less inconvenienced than any other road user in the area. Winchester is a city, and not a collection of separate enclaves, and no minor faction should have any greater input than anyone else. Jeff Ward, Walton Place, Winchester.
Andy Smith has a lovely story about a train-spotting cat. Sir, I am probably not the only person who yawns each week at the same old letters re Barton Farm, traffic in the city, etc., etc., ad nauseam. So I thought readers might like something different regarding a proper Winchester character. I refer to the legendary train-spotting cat, which I expect other readers may well be familiar with. He is often to be found sitting on the parapet of the railway bridge at the top of the Upper High Street, or sitting on the embankment on station approach, seemingly engrossed in the comings and goings on the track below. I'm amazed he doesn't have a notebook and pen, given the interest he seems to have. Perhaps he dreams of, one day, escaping his mundane existence and riding the train out of town. Who knows where he goes in his head? Catford, perhaps. Andy Smith, loud and close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And I'm afraid John D. Edwards brings us back to the traffic problem at the top of Stanmore Lane, saying, "We can't afford another fiasco. Sir, the report in the Hampshire Chronicle of April the 19th covered some important issues. It's true that motorists emerging from Oliver's Battery Road North do generally suffer longer delays than before the present layout of the junctions was introduced. The advanced stop line, ASL, referred to in the article as Cycle Refuge, at the top of Stanmore Lane is indeed the only one of its kind in Winchester. It's useful, but it suffers from being on a steep adverse gradient. However, it's vital to remember the objective of introducing the present layout, which was to provide a safe crossing of Stanmore Lane for school children on their way to and from King's School. But the new crossing, in two separately signalled parts on each side of the huge central refuge, is very slow for pedestrians to use. At busy times, large, unruly groups of children continue to jaywalk across Stanmore Lane at its junction with Oliver's Battery Road North, just as before. It still seems quite possible that someone may be killed, and so the main objective of the change to the layout has been unfulfilled. It's good the County Council is looking at redesigning the junctions. No doubt it will find it difficult to deal with the pedestrian crossing problem, but reducing delays for motorists leaving Oliver's Battery Road can be more straightforward. Less can be more. What's needed is simple. 1. Remove the rarely used pedestrian refuge. 2. Change the sequence of the light so that the exits from Stanmore Lane and Killam Lane will share an adequately long phase, rather than each have its own too short phase. Such sharing at a crossroads works well at many locations, e.g. the junction of Romsey Road with Battery Hill and King's Road. Given these changes, it will be possible to reposition the ASL further up Stanmore Lane, above the steepest part, making it easier and quicker for cyclists to clear the junction, a benefit for everybody. Cycling is to be encouraged. It's sustainable. It uses far less carbon, improves health and can reduce road congestion. We need a public exhibition of the new proposals. We can't afford another fiasco. John D. Edwards, Berwick Close, Week, Winchester.
Town society was only there by invitation, explains Natalie Carpenter, councillor, NATC. Sir, it needs to be made clear that whilst Alsford Society has resigned from new Alsford Town Council Planning Committee, it was only on the committee by invitation. Alsford Society is not an elected body, and as such never had any legal voting rights on the Planning Committee. The current situation with regard to the purchase of land between Albury Park House and the new Alsford Town Council offices highlighted the need for Alsford Society and any other local societies to remain independent to avoid any conflict of interests. The Planning Committee continues to consist of elected members. On occasion, we will consult with other local bodies, the Alsford Society included, if an application merits such consultation. Natalie Carpenter, Councillor.
Now, thank you, letter, on behalf of the Marie Curie Cancer Care. Sir, I'm writing on behalf of Marie Curie Cancer Care to thank everyone for their generous support of the Great Daffodil Appeal held last month. Wonderful amounts were raised as follows. Winchester, almost 2,500. Alsford, over 1,200. Wickham, over £300. Tesco Winnell, over £700. Tesco Whiteley, nearly £700. Sainsbury's Badger Farm, over £800. All thanks to the generosity of local people, as well as our great volunteers who collected on behalf of the charity. The money will fund Marie Curie nurses who provide high quality nursing totally free, giving terminally ill people the choice of dying at home. An additional 315 hours of nursing care can now be funded thanks to the kindness of the people who made a donation. For more about Marie Curie Cancer Care, please visit our website at www.mariecurie.org.uk or call us on 02380263123. Sally Sansom, Community Fundraiser, Hampshire and Isle of Wight.
And Peter Stewart asks, who will repay the billions lent to EU? Sir, the National Front won about 20% in the first round of the French presidential elections. Their campaign was simple: leave the euro and regain immigration control from the EU. With the growing anti-EU revolution in France, Germany, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Ireland and Italy, the pro-EU BBC continues to call the French National Front the far right. This is the same bias and blindness it displayed in the 1930s as Hitler gained power by the consent of an angry people. Most important of all, George Osborne has broken yet another promise by allocating 10 billion more to the IMF to prop up the failing euro by the back door. This aiding and abetting of a currency which can never work is criminal. The sooner the euro is abandoned, as undistorted markets demand, the easier it will be for Eurozone economies to adjust and for trade to improve, both globally and in Hampshire too. But who will repay all the money we have loaned to the EU? Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
And the last letter.
In a letter headlined Mass Trespass That Sparked Revolution, Dr. Owen Plunkett writes about our countryside. Sir, thousands of country lovers are celebrating the 80th anniversary of the Kinder Scout Trespass this week, not just in the Peak District, but all over the country. The effect of that event on our present countryside is huge. It's doubtful if the Countryside Act, Right to Roam, and national parks would exist if that great event had not taken place in 1932. It also triggered the formation of the Ramblers Association in 1935, and the Ramblers have since done so much to create the Rights of Way system to protect our countryside, create national parks, and enhance the enjoyment of walking and appreciation of wildlife. The last government passed legislation to create a coastal path all round the country. In the Portsmouth area, we require a path on the east coast of Hayling Island, where there is at present no access. Further west, the Solent Way, a long-distance, supposedly coastal path, is forced a long way inland due to the opposition of a number of large estates, including Bewley. Although preparations for the coastal path are underway in some parts, including round Weymouth, where some Olympic events are taking place, there are fears that progress in other areas will be delayed, and this should not be allowed to happen. Apart from the huge social benefits to the public, the path will generate many millions of pounds for the local economies, which will far exceed the cost of its creation. Recent government proposals, including a relaxation of planning rules, are a real threat to the countryside. We must protect and, wherever possible, improve the huge gains that we have made since 1932. Dr. Owen Plunkett, Queen's Road, Waterlooville.
And thank you to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. We ask passers-by, should more be done to encourage cycling in Winchester? Noel has the replies.
We asked, should more be done to encourage cycling in Winchester? Dermot Gibson, 21, student of Fifields Road, Highcliffe, said, it would be nice for people to cycle in Winchester. I think it would do a lot of good for the environment, and cycling is quite an enjoyable activity, so I can't see why it would be a bad thing. Whereas Anthony Miller, 77, retired of St Martin's Close, Winnall, said, there are already plans to open the Hockley Viaduct to cyclists, so I think there are plans in place to get more people cycling. It's better for your health and something I really enjoyed in my younger days. And Will Clarkson, 36, motor industry worker of Fairfield Road, Full Flood, said, I'm from Cambridge, which is like Winchester, but there are far more cyclists there, so it should be promoted more here, with many more cycle lanes and more places to lock up your bike. And Hope Talbot, 19, student of Barin Road, said, as someone who does not have a car, it would be useful to be able to cycle to more places, so I think it should be easier to cycle in the city centre, as long as people do it safely and don't end up hitting someone.
Now Ellen's got Westminster Diary for us.
And Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, writes, what will Hampshire Chronicle readers talk about in the pub or round the dinner table this weekend? Jobs? The wider economy? The health service? Mr Sarkozy? Or even, and please whisper this, anything but politics? I suspect the answer's somewhere in between, but I would bet it isn't the future composition of the House of Lords. Yet this week our politicians have been getting very hot under the collar about proposals to create hundreds of new paid party politicians. Personally, I want to see the Lords reformed. But we should start by thinking what we want a second chamber to actually do, not what we need to do to it for the expediency of the coalition. Let's reduce its size by allowing retirement and introducing disqualification. Remove the remaining hereditaries once and for all, and create a really independent appointments commission. We could do that now and get on with far more pressing issues facing our country, and I'll be making that case to the Prime Minister and his deputy. But I fear they'll ignore such calls and Parliament is set for many months of paralysis. The British Constitution, as Tony Blair found out, should be altered with extreme care and great respect for the law of unintended consequence. Closer to home and reality, I was shocked by last week's bomb scare that frightened many people in Winchester, but I paid tribute to the police, who, judging by the briefing they gave me, acted with all the haste and proportion I would expect. Since my last column, I have attended the enthronement of our new bishop and made my monthly visit to our hospital to keep close tabs on its progress under new management. I also got down on the farm to support a growing business in Guldleton, near Alsford, that is being frustrated by the local planning system. And, of course, there's all my usual work in Parliament, which included some pretty straight talking with the Home Secretary about the ongoing saga of Abu Qatada. You can see full details of it all, contact me or request help through my surgery, or by calling 01962... 791 110. That's if you want to contact Steve Brine, 01962 791 110.
Now we're going into our dusty files through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Claire.
1987. After 20 months of planning and hard work, a dream came true at Bishop's Waltham on Saturday with the opening of the town's museum. Winchester curator Miss Liz Lewis opened the museum and recalled the former display of local relics at the Bishop's Waltham Institute in cracked cases with many contents mouldering slowly. She recognised some of these in their smart new settings, but there were also new exhibits, and she was pleased the museum was actively collecting. And the next item. Amoco UK Exploration Company wanted to drill to see if there is oil or natural gas near King Somborn. They have submitted a planning application to Test Valley Borough Council for consideration by the County Council as the Mineral Planning Authority. The site covers 1.73 hectares and is off Firsdown Road between King Somborn and Brashfield. The land is currently used for agriculture. The applicants propose to be on site for a maximum of 18 months.
50 years ago, Noel?
Yes, two items from 1962. Hyde Abbey Motor Works' new development in Hyde Street, Winchester, is entering the final stages of its construction. The main building will comprise showrooms to the front, with offices above and two workshops behind. And the second section, formerly the office block and stores building, has been given another story. A comfortable lounge will be featured in the new building, where customers can wait whilst their cars are serviced. And the second item, the Health Committee decided at Winchester on Tuesday against a ban on cigarette smoking at meetings of the County Council and its committees. They rejected the idea of a complete prohibition and instead agreed to ask members to refrain from smoking. A similar request is to go to the Staff Joint Committee, asking employees not to smoke in public when on duty. The decisions are an outcome of the deliberations on the report of the Royal College of Physicians.
And back to 100 years now, Helen.
Lest we forget, in 1912, the Winchester branch of the National League for Opposing Woman's Suffrage held a meeting in the Guildhall last night, the Earl of Northbrook presiding. Its objects are stated as follows. To resist the proposal to admit women to the parliamentary franchise and to Parliament, whilst maintaining the principle of their representation on bodies concerned with the domestic and social affairs of the community. There was a numerous attendance, a considerable percentage of those present in the hall being ladies. And, as we aren't able to forget this year, an impressive memorial service for the Titanic victims was held at St Mary's Church, Southampton, on a Saturday. Amongst those present were the Marquess of Winchester, Lord Lieutenant of the County, and Mrs Smith, widow of the captain of the ill-fated ship. The tall figure of the Bishop of Winchester, walking at the rear of the procession as the representative of diocesan sympathy, caught many eyes.
Finally, 200 years ago, please, Claire.
Serious stuff from 1812. A communication has been received from France, brought by a flag of truce on Sunday to Dover and immediately forwarded to Lord Castlereagh's office. It is thought to propose for an accommodation between the two countries, as it is not unlikely that Bonaparte's blow against Russia may be preceded by a profession of pacific sentiments. If his overtures be not accepted, which under the circumstances of the war in the peninsula is most probable, he will derive a pretext for throwing upon us the odium of the prolongation of hostilities. And the next one. On Wednesday, J. Salt, seaman of His Majesty's ship Iris, was tried for striking the master at arms, which being proved, the court sentenced him to suffer death. The master at arms was conveying the prisoner from one part of the ship to another, when Salt took up a shipwright's mallet and struck him on the back part of his head with all his force. He is now extremely ill.
It's time for first person.
Right, this is first person by George Hayter, and it's called A Future of Sensible Spelling, which I'll spell out for you at the end, and you'll see why. We English speakers sometimes allow ourselves a moment of smug satisfaction that our language has conquered the world. We can hardly claim credit as individuals, but it is hard not to feel triumphant that we don't need a phrase book to travel. From Barcelona to Beijing, hotel receptionists greet us in our native tongue. Around the globe, commerce, academia, the arts and science are conducted in what has become the international dialect. English is now so widespread that its position as the global lingua franca looks unassailable. Or is it? Nicholas Ostler is a linguistics historian who thinks its days are numbered. English may be the first language to dominate the world, but, Ostler reckons, it will decline in the way dozens of regional lingua francas have done, from Hindi to Latin. The world has almost a billion English speakers, but only about a third are native speakers. That means 600 million of them are second language speakers with no innate loyalty to English. Just now, it's advantageous for them to learn English for reasons of finance or status, but that incentive could disappear, perhaps through the supremacy of the West being eclipsed by China. One way to boost the appeal of English would be to simplify its spelling, replacing apple with apple, A-P-E-L, and bought with bought, B-O-R-T. Yes, ancient culture would be supplanted by mundane phonetics, and I know we'd all miss the old name if this was the Hampshire Chronicle, spelt A-H-A-M-P-S-H-E-R-K-R-O-N-I-K-E-L. But can we really expect the planet to continue embracing a language which contains irregularities like knife and wood? And think of the efficiency savings that spelling reform would bring the UK, not least in our primary schools. We in Winchester have a deep interest in the continuing ubiquity of English, as the language was pretty much invented here. This was the capital of the emerging nation of England in Anglo-Saxon times, and it was here that King Alfred led reforms which spread the earliest written English, now known as Winchester Standard. For a few years now, academics under the banner The English Project have been planning a museum in Winchester to celebrate its pivotal role in the birth of the English and the birth of the language. A dilapidated warehouse overlooking the bus station is a possible location. If it happens, the historical exhibits and interactive displays will include a device allowing you to hear your own voice speaking in the early dialect. and as well as being retrospective, I hope the museum will look forward with ideas of how English may develop, perhaps by proffering an English dictionary of rationalised spelling. It could be called the Winchester Dictionary. How appropriate it would be if, as well as being at the heart of the language's past, the Winchester was also to spell out its future, a future of sensible spelling, spelt F-E-W-C-H-E-R, of sensible, S-E-N-S-A-B-U-L, and spelling, spelt with only one L.
And it's editorial comment with Ellen.
We must look to the future too, says the editor. Winchester is rich in history, a tourism highlighted by two things in the last 7 days. The launch of the Winchester Mint, a volume about the coin-making workshop in the Middle Ages, and also by the use of the College Street area last week as a location for the filming of Les Miserables, set in 19th century Paris. The forthcoming Diamond Jubilee, celebrating 60 years on the throne for Queen Elizabeth II, will also be a chance to look back on the past. But there are other stories in the Chronicle which suggest that whilst the city is great at revering bygone eras, it may be lacking when it comes to looking after the future. We report on the ongoing issue of primary school places, with many local families set to be disrupted by failures to get children into the same schools as their siblings, greatly increasing the number of school runs and worsening congestion and pollution. The County Council was warned about the looming crisis several years ago, and now the chickens are noisily squawking on their final approaches. The disquiet at the Carroll Centre in Stanmore over the future of Sure Start reveals that despite the near-unanimous accepted success of this programme, spending on the young is not the priority that it should be.
And now we're going to continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Claire.
Village anxious over incinerator plan. Villagers near Winchester are overwhelmingly opposed to plans for a power station near their homes, according to a poll. Some 60 people who attended the annual parish assembly at Micheldever Station voted unanimously against the proposal for the rail sidings. Clean Power Properties and Network Rail want to build an energy from waste burner with four chimneys up to 100 feet high. The advanced conversion technology incinerator would process household, commercial and industrial rubbish 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The scheme also includes an anaerobic digester for green garden and food waste. Under the proposals, up to 210,000 tonnes of waste per year would be taken to the site, enough to produce 7.6 megawatts of electricity. Developers say benefits include diverting more waste from landfill, generating renewable energy, and creating up to 30 full-time jobs. But the nearest homes are just 80 metres from the site. The railway's sidings are also a site of importance for nature conservation and next to Micheldever Spoil Heap Site of Special Scientific Interest. Parish Councillor John Botham said, "There was a real strength of feeling at the meeting. Every single person was against it. People are incredibly anxious, even though it has not yet got to the planning application stage. It is just a totally and utterly inappropriate place to put this waste facility. It is far too close to people's homes. The chimneys would impose on the skyline and there would be noise and disturbance for local residents and wildlife from all the lorries." Critics have pointed out the County Council has spare capacity at its own energy from waste burners, including one at nearby Chinham. Villagers backed a motion calling on the county planning officers to oppose the scheme in any discussions with the developers. Parish Council is also seeking an urgent public meeting with county officers to discuss local concerns. The scoping report, which revealed the details of the scheme, is the first stage of a planning application. Detailed environmental impact studies will have to be carried out. If Hampshire County Council gives planning consent, developers aim to open the plant by 2015.
And to do what seems to be the main story of the week. Stargazers disappointed as Crow and Co. shoot film scenes in the dead of night. They came, they acted, and kept a low profile. Hollywood stars Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman were in Winchester last week filming for Les Miserables. Scenes were shot in the Cathedral Close, College Street, and inside Winchester College. But the hundreds of people who hoped for a glimpse of the stars in College Street last Thursday were disappointed as the cameras finally rolled in the early hours when most had gone to bed. Filming in the Close and College had been behind closed gates. College Street was turned into 19th century Paris, with brown gravel on the road, a French replacement for the royal coat of arms above Prior's Gate, and the removal of street furniture, including two streetlights, a litter bin, and a finger post. Eight streetlights were switched off during the filming. Kingsgate Arch, closed to traffic since the late 1980s, was reopened. The two stone bollards were removed to allow a horse and carriage through. Earlier this week, the closure was enforced with nothing more than three traffic cones. Among the crowd last Thursday was Tom Vaux, a student of Little Minster Street, who said, "It's weird, as I live nearby and I usually park my car where they're filming today. It's great to see them come to Winchester and very exciting. I'm hoping to see Hugh Jackman." He was disappointed. There were no reported sightings of any of the actors around the city. John Howard, manager of the Wickham Arms pub in Kingsgate Street, said, "It was quite exciting and a nice talking point for the day. There must have been about 200 to 300 people on Thursday evening. As it was quite cold after dark, people were coming in for a drink and then going back out. Sadly, the stars didn't make it in. Anything that brings people over to the old side of town is great." Filming began in the city 2 weeks ago, when the Chantry at Winchester College was used for a scene with Anne Hathaway, Amanda Seyfried, and Eddie Redmayne. The college was again used last Friday. Les Miserables is the latest in a long list of high-profile films to shoot in Winchester, including The Da Vinci Code and Elizabeth. Winchester College welcomed in the film crew for an undisclosed sum, as it was still the Easter holidays. A city council spokeswoman said the cost of removing street furniture would fall on the filmmakers Barricade Productions and not the local council taxpayer. She declined to reveal the figure, save to say it would be in the low thousands. Around 180 acting and production staff were in the city, plus around 45 extras. A base at the St. Catherine's Park and Park and Ride at Bar End allowed quick access to the film site. Location manager Camilla Stevenson said, "Filming has gone incredibly well. It has been an absolute pleasure to shoot in such a film-friendly city, which offers extraordinarily beautiful architecture. Our brief was to find the Paris that existed in the early 1800s, and Winchester fitted the bill. We'd like to thank Winchester College, the local council and county council, Winchester Cathedral, and local businesses and residents for their generous support and cooperation." And of course, there's a lovely photograph spread with Russell Crowe looking suitably strong and and Hugh Jackman, and then there's a crowd of people standing behind barriers waiting to see the thing. And then there's a lovely picture of the gate through Kingsgate with a horse and a carriage and horses going through it. So that's great.
The Earl of Wessex at Jubilee Service. The Earl of Wessex will be the guest of honour at the County Diamond Jubilee Service in Winchester Cathedral on Sunday, May the 27th, at 3:30 in the afternoon. Now, the service is invitation only, but members of the public can apply for tickets. Now, they don't give a telephone number, so I'm going to give you the address to write to and also the website address. The closing date for tickets is May the 10th, so applications need to be made before then, either in writing to Hampshire Lieutenant Office, Searles House, Gar Street, Winchester. That's Hampshire Lieutenancy Office, Searles House, Gar Street, Winchester, SO238GQ, SO238GQ, or online at Hampshire County Council's Diamond Jubilee website on http://www.hants.gov.uk/diamondjubilee. And the closing dates for to apply for tickets, as I've said, is May the 10th.
Iconic photos draw exhibition crowds. Iconic pictures taken by acclaimed photographer Jane Bone are currently on show in the gallery at Winchester's Discovery Centre. Among the images featured are John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Richard Nixon and Mick Jagger, which are all included in Miss Bone's latest book, Exposures. National newspapers have been using her picture for decades and as long ago as the late 1940s. Traditionally working in black and white, using only natural light, she has photographed countless household names, mainly for The Observer. A host of movie stars and filmmakers are also there, including Michael Caine, Orson Welles and Spike Lee. The framed image of the latter is hanging next to one of Margaret Thatcher in the current exhibition. So far, the exhibition, which runs until Sunday, May the 20th, has attracted about 4,300 people to see the work of Miss Bone, who lives near Alton. This is accompanied by a member of the office staff in the gallery, along with some pictures in prominence, one of John Lennon.
Residents' role reversal. Dressed as teenagers, residents of St Cross Grange Care Home, Winchester, did their own version of a marathon to raise funds. They stepped out for a 3-mile walk, or were given helpful pushes in their wheelchairs, to raise money for the home. Adding a dose of fun, the staff dressed as elderly people and the residents as teenagers, which certainly got them noticed in Winchester town centre. St Cross Grange is one of the 17 homes earned by Greensleeves Homes Trust that took part in the sponsored walk. Stuart Cross, Greensleeves Deputy Chief Executive, said, "The day was a lot of fun and helped promote unity and a stronger sense of community throughout all our homes."
A survey shows carers are in need of more support. Tens of thousands of carers in Hampshire are putting their health at risk because they are unaware of respite services available to them, research has revealed. Many of those who look after their sick, disabled or elderly relatives don't realise they are entitled to specialist support simply because they are unpaid. And older carers who are forced to retire earlier to help are increasingly bearing the brunt of the problem amid an ageing population, according to a review carried out by Vitalise, which has a respite break centre at Netley. The study, over 5 years, reveals how more than half of the older carers had not even received a carer's assessment, since they did not regard themselves as carers. As a consequence, they were unaware that local authority funding for respite care and short breaks even existed. According to Vitalise, which provides short holiday breaks for people with disabilities, there are more than 120,000 carers across Hampshire. And Vitalise Chief Executive Chris Simmons says, "This review paints a stark picture about the problems people with disabilities and carers face in accessing essential support, like funding for respite breaks. But it also shows that there are many more people out there who don't even think of themselves as carers, but they are, and so entitled to support. Clearly, more needs to be done to reach out to this army of invisible carers across the UK, since without the escape valve of regular time off from caring, we know only too well that they risk reaching breaking point and ending up sick, depressed, and facing the very real risk of becoming disabled themselves."
County set to party for Queen. Hampshire is preparing to celebrate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee with scores of street parties confirmed up and down the county. Thousands of well-wishers are expected to take advantage of the extended bank holiday weekend from the 2nd to the 5th of June. Council bosses say that so far, more than 130 streets across the county will be closed to traffic for dozens of parties across the weekend. They have received 40 Jubilee Party applications in Southampton, 39 in Winchester, 25 in Test Valley, and 14 in both the New Forest and Eastleigh. In scenes reminiscent of the Queen's coronation and last year's royal wedding, scores of families are set to line up tables, deck their streets with bunting, and tuck into sandwiches and jelly to join in the celebrations. Other events taking place across the region include the Cunard Three Queens Diamond Jubilee celebration in Southampton. In what is expected to be the biggest celebration outside London, the Red Arrows will join Cunard's three ships to celebrate the Queen's reign on Tuesday, the 5th of June. Queen Mary II, Queen Elizabeth and Queen Victoria will sail up the Solent in formation in preparation for a day of special tributes, spectacular fireworks and celebrations. Meanwhile, Winchester will host Jubilate, a weekend of live entertainment and a street party through the centre. This is accompanied by a very, very pleasant photograph of the Queen with a striking blue hat on.
Clare's Clinic Campaign. An Oxford teacher and charity volunteer, Claire Whale, has recently returned home after visiting Bangladesh. The mother of three is president of the Oxford branch of Save the Children and went with four other volunteers to see some of the charity's projects. Claire, 52, of Buttermere Gardens, teaches at Chawton School near Alton, but for 14 years worked at Perrins School, Oxford. She visited a remote village in the Habiganj district, where they were the first white people the villagers had seen. Save the Children hopes to build a clinic in this village later this year. Claire and the volunteers on the trip, through various fundraising events, talks to local groups, schools and organisations, hoping to raise the £70,000 the clinic will cost to build, equip, staff and run for a year.
Have your say on the city's five-year plan. Civic chiefs have launched a public consultation on its new plan for the future of Winchester for the next 5 years. Winchester Town Forum has drafted the vision for Winchester 2012 to 2017, which sets out key guidelines for future decisions about economic and social changes. Now, the document is an update of a 2006 version. It's available on the City Council website, winchester.gov.uk. Hard copies will also be sent to local organisations, and it's also available to the public at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street or the Council offices in Colebrook Street. Steve Tilbury, Council Corporate Director of Operations, said, "The updated vision for Winchester reflects the new challenges that face the city over the next 5 years." The Town Forum has reviewed the effects these will have and how we might respond to them, and has also taken external advice before coming to its conclusions. We hope that individuals, local organisations and community groups will discuss the draft and let us know what they think. And a final version will be launched in June. So comments can be sent to Colin Veal at the Council by post and must be submitted by May the 18th.
MP hails new apprenticeships. Up to 6,500 people started an apprenticeship in Hampshire in a five-month period, according to Eastleigh MP Chris Hune. The former Energy Secretary, pictured, says the figures were compiled for the county between August 2011 and January 2012. He said, "Thanks to the Regional Growth Fund, we've already invested £113 million in the South East and created about 19,500 jobs in new and existing businesses, as well as in the supply chain, with more to come. For us to be successful, people need the skills and experiences to take advantage of new jobs being created in our area. Apprenticeships make companies more productive and give young people the experience and skills they need."
Double amputee to cycle across America for charity. He lost both legs in Afghanistan, but that is not going to stop Sergeant Simon Harmer cycling across America. The injured serviceman from Kingsworthy will be riding a specially adapted hand-driven bike for the challenge. He'll be joined by seven other soldiers who have also been wounded in action. They'll be taking part in Race Across America, which covers 3,051 miles in 12 states. It includes more than 100,000 feet of climbing and distances of more than 350 miles per day. It is regarded as one of the toughest cycling challenges in the world and is longer than the Tour de France. Sergeant Harmer, 36, lost his legs after stepping on an improvised explosive device while on patrol in Afghanistan 3 years ago. The married father of one, who served as an army medic, will tackle the cycle race in June. His team includes servicemen from across Britain. They'll be joined by a support crew. They'll be raising money for Help for Heroes. Visit bemycharity.com/battlebackram2012 to find out more. I'll say that again. Visit bemycharity, that's just B-M-Y, charity.com/battlebackram. I wonder if that's a misprint. Battlebackroom 2012 to find out more.
Bus will keep youngsters mobile. It's another article about cycling. Youngsters have received a boost thanks to a car dealer. Hampshire-based charity Youth Options, which helps young people aged 6 to 19 and their families across the county, took delivery of a new bus at a major discount from Freeborn Citroën, the Citroën dealer in Southampton and Winchester. The dealer and the charity have a long-standing connection. The firm has supplied several buses and vans, and last year provided a Roma Home R40 backup vehicle for a charity cycle ride from John O'Groats to Land's End. This summer, it will be lead sponsor for the charity's tournament at the Royal Winchester Golf Club. And there's a picture of a very posh bus with outlines of lots of wavy people on it. It says Youth Options in big letters. And it's got Andrew Jones and Mark Dixon, who represent the Freeborn Group and Youth Options, smiling by it.
Community Group puts a spring in the steps for elderly. Winchester residents put a spring in their steps at a concert. More than 50 Week residents attended a special Over 65s event organised by North Winchester Your Community Action, NWYCA. The guests, many of whom were in their 80s, were entertained by the Wessex Chordsmen Band, who played old favourites with the help of some audience participation. The event was funded by Hampshire Action Teams with support from County Councillors Jackie Porter and Frenette Dickens. It was followed by a fish and chips meal provided by Froggyman Catering. Ali Ramsden, NWYCA chairman, said the event was successful and possible future events were discussed, including tea dances, craft events, skittles and a Scrabble club. She said, "We found that many of the older people in our area attend different venues for socialising, church, Henry Beaufort School, a Salvation Army group and the Winchester Club, but many felt that they would like access to more activities and services within their community and supported our proposal for a new purpose-built centre, especially with a community cafe." This is accompanied by a photograph of the Wessex Chordsmen, looking quite splendid in their tan-coloured waistcoats and bow ties, and looking as if they've just come back off a Mediterranean cruise.
Join Ray on Hospice's big fundraiser. Naomi House Children's Hospice Chief Executive Ray Kipling has thrown down a challenge to business leaders across the South. Mr. Kipling, who announced his retirement earlier this year, will be ending his time at the helm of the charity by taking part in Naomi House's biggest event, the 26-mile Clarendon Way walk on June the 10th. Not wanting to walk alone, he is calling on fellow chief executives and business leaders from across the region to commit to completing the walk, or the shorter 12-mile version from Broughton to Salisbury. Mr. Kipling has been chief executive of Naomi House since 2005 and has spent his life working in the charitable sector, including with the RNLI and Wessex Medical Research. The Marathon Length event is a non-competitive walk from Winchester Cathedral to Salisbury Cathedral. This year, Naomi House is celebrating 15 years of supporting children and families across Wessex, and is hoping this will be the biggest and most successful Clarendon Way walk ever. Businesses can enter either a team or an individual to join Mr. Kipling on the walk. Those who cannot join him on the day can still show their support by sponsoring him.
And here's another article about Naomi House. Seeing for Themselves, it's entitled. Naomi House Children's Hospice welcomed a special visitor when the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Hallam Mills, met staff and families that rely on the services offered by the charity. He was joined by his wife, Alison, on a tour of both Naomi House and Jack's Place, led by Chairman Khalid Aziz and Chief Executive Ray Kipling. Children, young people and their families answered questions and explained the importance of the hospices in coping with the challenges they face daily. The High Sheriff, who lives in Wynwood, has a particular interest in the care offered to vulnerable adults in the South, and this was one of his first official visits, his 10-year-long tenure only starting earlier this month. And he said, Naomi House and Jack's Place are special places, and I am so grateful children from Hampshire and Dorset are able to use these marvellous hospices. Professor Aziz said, I am delighted the High Sheriff and his wife spent so much time with us, learning about our work. Their interest is a great boost to us, and I know they will help us to spread the word about Naomi House around both Hampshire and Dorset.
Questions raised on street cleaning. Suburban streets in Winchester should be cleaned more often, the latest City Council meeting was told. The call was made by Lib Dem councillor Robert Hutchinson, who asked how often they were swept. Tory Cabinet member for the Environment, Councillor Victoria Weston, said it depended on the individual roads. She added that if he supplied a list of any streets he was concerned about, she could check when they were cleaned. The landscape group cleans the city streets after the previous contract with Serco ran out in October.
Paralympian Peter proves a real inspiration. Winchester school children were inspired by a visit from a Paralympian. Hairstock Primary School welcomed three-time gold medalist Peter Hull, MBE, on Monday, April 23rd. Pupils have been learning about the Paralympics, and Peter took an assembly telling children about his success at the Barcelona Paralympics in 1992. He was born without legs and arms ending at the elbow, but told children he started swimming at a very young age as part of an exercise regime and won his first gala when he was 10. He added the experience inspired him to keep training and push on to compete at two Paralympics. Jackie Sankey, head teacher, said, "It's a real honour and privilege to have Mr. Hull visit the school and speak with the children and teachers. We are very grateful to him for giving up his time to come and inspire our children. His visit has really brought to life their learning about the Paralympics." Children also got the chance to see Peter's gold medals up close and had a question and answer session with the athlete. The visit was part of a number of Olympic-themed events at the school over the next few months, with a school Olympic committee arranging more visits from athletes.
Homes for disused land? Council chiefs plan to sell a patch of disused land behind Winchester's former fire station. Now, the plot, known as Faberlux Yard, is also behind several houses in Lower Brook Street, so it could provide space for 3 two-bedroomed houses, the council heard. The idea is to link them to the redevelopment of the fire station, but planning permission for that scheme is yet to be granted. Developer Bargate Homes withdrew proposals for 47 flats last month after planning officers said the scheme should be refused. And the firm is now working on fresh plans. So if these are approved, the council will look to sell Faberlux Yard so that it can become part of the scheme, the meeting heard.
This is an item about a fundraising event. Evening raises £5,000. More than £5,000 was raised at a charity evening at the Theatre Royal in Winchester featuring Anne Widdecombe and Alastair Stewart. The newsreader interviewed the former politician about her career in Westminster and also in television. The venue's director, Mark Cortes, welcomed guests at the fundraiser, who included the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Councillor Barry and Christine Lipscomb. The evening's entertainment also included a performance by the Wessex Boys, a duo from Wessex Dance Academy. The event was organised by Winchester Rotary Club. Several good causes will benefit, including the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. Some cash will also be used to buy Rotary Club shelter boxes, which provide essential supplies to victims in disaster areas. This is accompanied by a photograph of the mayor and his wife, Alistair Stewart, Anne Widdicombe, the Rotary president David Farthing, and Mark Cortis of the Theatre Royal.
Village pub saved by people power packs in the punters. Terrible alliteration there. An historic pub saved by regulars is doing so well that it has taken on four staff to cope with demand. The John O'Gaunt has been revived after closing down on New Year's Eve. The 150-year-old pub in Horsebridge, near King Somborne, faced being turned into flats. But following a campaign to keep it as a pub, a planning application was dropped. Then Tony Simmons stepped forward and, with help from an army of volunteers, revamped and reopened the pub on Easter Saturday. Since then, it has been doing a roaring trade. Tony said, "It has got off to a tremendous start. We are having to take on staff to cope with demand. The pub is looking so fresh with the hand-painted signs, flowers, etc., and the life has been put back into her once again. I hope she'll be a vital part of the community in Horsebridge. I have too many people to thank, but I'll do my best to repay them all by making the pub a success, and know with people like them behind me, I can do just that." Following coverage in the Hampshire Chronicle, the grand opening night alone attracted more than 370 people, and since then there's been a steady flow of locals and people from farther afield. Real ales are on tap, plus a new menu by Stockbridge chef Liam McDowell, based on local produce such as fish from the Test and local farmers' produce. King Somborne Parish Councillor Dawn Harrison, who was involved in the campaign to reopen the pub, said, "It's been packed out. It has shown us that it just had to be the right person and the right type of hospitality."
Communities to play part in 20 miles per hour zones. Plans for a 20 mile per hour speed limit without speed humps on residential roads in five areas have won the backing of county chiefs. Hampshire County Council has agreed to spend £200,000 on a pilot project which could pave the way for similar schemes across the county. County chiefs have regular requests for 20 mile per hour speed zones from residents and community groups, and the proposed Residential 20 programme is a move away from focusing on the number of accidents to justify reduced speed limits to more emphasis on improving quality of life. The Department for Transport has said councils can introduce 20 mile per hour zones in residential roads in cities, towns and villages where there is community support and streets are being used by pedestrians and cyclists. A report from Stuart Jarvis, Director of Economy, Transport and the Environment, said evidence suggested 20 mile per hour zones can improve road safety. The move comes after government reduced the red tape and cost involved in introducing the 20 mile per hour schemes, and councils can now use symbols painted on roads with fewer upright signs and traffic calming measures such as speed humps. Officers have been asked to suggest five pilot sites across the county, and they're likely to be areas which already have a 30 mile an hour limit, where there is support for a lower speed limit and existing calming measures. Local residents will be consulted before a 20 mile zone is introduced, and the council plans to measure traffic speeds before and after the new zone, but says the most important measure of success will be how the public see it. Customer complaints and compliments will be monitored.
And another sports story. Simmons win national squash crown. Peter Simmons' squash team have won the 2012 National Schools Squash Under-19 Trophy. Competing against three other teams from around the country, Canterbury King's School, Cheltenham Boys' College and Newcastle's Heaton Manor at the National Squash Centre in Manchester, they beat finalists Heaton Manor in nail-bitingly close games. Representing the college, and in this picture that's attached, with coach Simon Duquesne, were Justine Alexander, Alex Armstrong, Tim Bailey, Jeremy Carter, Ben Clark, Sam Fowler, Ollie Hughes, Ben Vandervelt. Eton Manor cruised through the first semi-final 5-0 against the King's School. In the second semi-final, Peter Simmons edged a much tighter match 3-2 against Cheltenham College. Ollie Hughes was in wonderful form, gliding around the court and always in control. Neither did Tim Bailey disappoint, hitting nicks in every conceivable direction. The star of the crucial match, however, was Ben Clark, playing with an injury but determined not to let the side down. He came from behind in the last game to give Peter Simmons the victory they needed.
Bid for more phone masts. More applications have been made by mobile phone company Vodafone to build masts in Winchester. It includes one site where the firm has twice withdrawn its plans, faced with vocal opposition from residents in Stoke Road, Abbots Barton. Now Vodafone is trying again as it aims to boost its 3G coverage with a fresh network of masts across the city. It withdrew plans for six of them in March 2011, while a seventh was blocked by planners. This time around, four sites have been identified, including Stoke Road. Residents there have already pledged to fight the plans again. Two of the others would be built at Chilbotton Avenue in Winchester and Andover Road North in Hairstock. The first scheme to be submitted, as reported last week, is for the corner of Stockbridge Road and Stony Lane in Week. Protesters there have also pledged to fight. Winchester City Council is expected to make a decision on the schemes within the next few weeks.
Book opens another chapter in City's rich history. After decades, an important new book on Winchester's history has finally been published. The Winchester Mint tells the story of the coin-making workshops that produced at least 24 million silver pennies and possibly as many as 50 million from Anglo-Saxon times up to the 13th century. The mint was located in the Prentice area of the High Street, and it was a symbol of the power of Winchester when it was the capital of England before it was usurped by London. The volume launched last Friday draws together much of the work of archaeologists who delved into the earth under the city centre between 1961 and 1972. Led by Professor Martin Biddle, the series of urban excavations has been hailed as among the most important in Europe. And the Winchester Mint, which costs £100, is volume 8 in the Winchester series published by Oxford University Press. Many more will follow, depending on funding. Last year, the Winchester Excavations Committee launched an appeal to raise £80,000 and are halfway to the target. A Friends of Winchester Studies organisation is being formed to help with fundraising and place the publication schedule on a firmer footing. Attending the launch in the Old Museum at Winchester College were more than 100 people, including Dr. Yvonne Harvey, the lead author who has travelled the world to take photographs of more than 3,000 of the surviving 5,000 coins. Jock MacDonald, vice chairman of the Winchester Excavations Committee, said of the book, "It is not just about Winchester. It is very much a part of England. It is the history of England and the history of the birth of England." Professor Biddle is the series editor and said the project was on firmer ground than in 2008-10, when its future was in doubt, before generous donations from Lords Ashburton and Sainsbury secured its immediate future. Present at the launch was Stefan Lipper, professional fundraiser who back in the 1990s helped the cathedral raise £7 million and has been advising the committee. Professor Biddle said, "We are winning, but we can only do so with people's help." Forthcoming volumes in the series planned include later this year The People of Early Winchester, covering the 1,000 years from Romano-British times to the Middle Ages, and also The Historic Towns Atlas of Winchester, due early in 2013. This summer, a folding map of Winchester in 1800 will be published by Old House Books at £9.99.
Future Swimming Stars Olympic Encounter. Former Olympic swimmer Karen Pickering put the stars of the future through their paces at a free swim clinic in Winchester. Organised by Southern Water at River Park Leisure Centre, it helped to mark the 20th anniversary of the company's Learn to Swim scheme. It has taught more than 600,000 youngsters to swim in Hampshire, Isle of Wight, Kent and Sussex since 1992. Karen won more major championship medals than any other female British swimmer, competing at four consecutive Olympic Games. She will be commentating for the BBC at the Olympics and Channel 4 at the Paralympics and said, "It's wonderful to be able to celebrate both the 20th year of Learn to Swim and the Olympics being held in London. I've taken part in previous Learn to Swim events with Southern Water, so I know how successful and popular the scheme is. These clinics were a chance to build on that and give some specialist training to some of the area's best young swimmers." This is accompanied by a photograph of Karen with standing outside the pool with about 20 young people standing in the pool. Suits.
Jump to it at a party. To help celebrate Marwell Wildlife's 40th anniversary is offering the public the chance to visit the park after hours. Visitors can see the animals at sunset, meet the keepers and enjoy talks and presentations, and maybe even see stilt-walking kangaroos. Becky Glenister, events manager, said, "To keep the party swinging, we have incredible performances and entertainment, from costumed stilt walkers to chainsaw juggling, African drumming, to comedy street theatre. The party in the park is on Friday, June the 1st, from 6:30pm until approximately 9:30pm. Tickets cost £16 for adults, £12 for children 3 to 16, and under 3s are free." And there's a slightly disturbing photograph of three very tall men dressed as kangaroos leaping high in the air.
Winchester boys reign in Spain. Winchester youth under 13 boys pulled off a spectacular 2-1 win, away win, against the academy side of Spanish giants Atletico Madrid. The Winchester boys reached the final of a tournament held at El Escorial, just north of the Spanish capital, last week, beating San Lorenzo comfortably. They sampled international football, lined up alongside their rivals for respective national anthems, before playing the match against the backdrop of chanting Atletico supporters. Winchester were not intimidated and matched their rivals pass for pass, closing them down and dominating the midfield. The Winchester back four was solid throughout the game and gave Atletico few chances to break through. Midfielders Jimmy Hawkins and Harry Bales worked superbly together and scored a goal each going into half-time. Atletico pulled one goal back in a tense second half, and Winchester goalkeeper Alejandro Agueles made a couple of difficult match-winning saves to keep his team ahead. All the Winchester players kept their nerve, and each member of the team contributed to our well-deserved win.
Another honour for Ovington Pub. The Bush Inn at Ovington has won a Superior Quality Assured Award in the Hampshire Hospitality Awards 2012. The Wadworth-owned pub near Alsford was commended for being full of character. Its menu also offers a traditional quality feel with blackboard dishes and specials and lighter options at lunchtimes, judges noted. There are only a small number of Superior Awards made each year, and this is the second time the Bush has received one. Landlord Nick Young, pictured with his wife Kath, Nick is obviously also the chef, said, "We pride ourselves in our great food, and it is a real achievement to be recognised with one of the coveted Superior Awards. Our style is freshly cooked, seasonal produce prepared in an unpretentious style, and it certainly has proved popular with customers." It is not the first time that the pub, which stands beside the River Itchen and Pilgrim's Way, has scooped an award. In 2007, it was named as Hampshire Country Pub of the Year.
No action over wrong bills. No further action will be taken after around 1,000 council tax bills were sent to the wrong homes in the Winchester district. The issue was raised by opposition leader Councillor Kelsey Learney when the authority met last Wednesday. Cabinet Member for Finance and Estates, Councillor Keith Wood, said the mistake was made by a council subcontractor. He added that the correct bills had now been sent out, following the error several weeks ago. He also said the council had informed the Information Commissioner's office, which said no further action was needed.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks also to our readers, Claire Caffreen.
Bye-bye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Ellen Gray.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. But thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Now, please post your memory sticks back in a yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.